The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And like I told you, we'll be interviewing Miss Cavell St. Joseph, who is the president of the HRMATT, and it's a globally recognized human resource executive with over 20 years of experience working to effectively balance the big picture thinking and strategic planning with hands-on execution. So she's going to give you some tidbits and tips on how to navigate through the work world, especially if you're a young person now coming out of school and would like a heads up on how to approach applying for the job, what would be best on the resume and that kind of thing. So let's step into the conversation with Ms. Cavell Joseph, St. Joseph, and she's the president of HRMATT, HRMATT, and is a globally recognized human resources executive. So let's say good morning to her. Good morning to Ms. Joseph. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm fine, thanks. And you, happy International Women's Day to you and all your listeners.
And also to you. We are here to talk about the place of human resources. Just to briefly talk about your experience, you've been working for over 20 years, working to effectively balance big picture thinking and strategic planning with hands-on execution. Your passion is providing HR solutions to colleagues and clients by helping them build their HR infrastructure through technology, compliance, and people. You were recently elected the first president of the UE Arthur Lovejack Global School of Business Alumni Association and the first president of the Caribbean Institute for Human Resource Management registered in Jamaica. The CAL HRM is a regional body of Caribbean Human Resource Management Associations working in partnership with and in the interest of human capital development across the region. So just wanted to welcome you to the space. And in terms of International Women's Day, we wanted to discuss with you the opportunities and the tools that are needed for women entering the workspace. What would be, first off, the first top three tips that you would give to young women entering the workspace?
Okay, well, as someone who recruits and selects for a living, basically, it's one of the primary functions that I perform amongst many others. I would think for any young person, and in particular, young woman entering into the workspace, you have to be clear about your career goals and what you want to achieve. At the entry level point, especially if it's your first time being employed, but therefore it's just really to acquire work experience, but that should always connect to your ultimate goal. So from a young child, I was quite clear about what I wanted to do. At least I thought I was clear because I initially started off pursuing law, and then I entered into HR later on when I did my master's, right? So you may find yourself entering into the workspace and you're still not sure certain about what you want to do. And in time, you find or you discover your passion and what you really love. But you should be clear, at least in the first instance, about what you're trying to achieve. So if it's just work experience you need, be certain about what type of environment you'd like to be a part of this piece. So I often advise people, don't apply to any and anywhere, but make sure that organization, research the organization, and make sure the values and everything you know about that company suits what you're looking for. I know young people are not thinking sometimes about all these things, but sometimes you enter into a workspace and you have a very awful experience because you didn't necessarily research the company beforehand to get a sense of what it's like to work in that organization. So you have to be clear about what you want. The second thing, of course, is to hone in your skills. And I say that mainly because people think that perhaps you have a degree and that's all that is required. But employers, they are looking for the right attitude. They're looking for someone who have additional soft skills, people-oriented, who are good at resolving conflict, because you're going to encounter that, especially if in customer service and you have an irate customer to attend to. How you respond to that customer also matters and could impact that business. Mm-hmm. So certainly having soft skills, the ability to deal with conflict, the ability to converse with people easily, as well, it's critical. And then I would often say, always be willing to learn and to accept feedback and criticism. because you don't know it all. And we have multiple generations in the workspace, and each generation could teach you something. Sometimes there's generational conflict in the workspace because one generation feel like the other perhaps too old and shouldn't be here in the first place. The other things, these young people are always on their phone and they're not interested in working and they don't have a good work ethic, and there's productivity issues. So when you hear the conversations and how they all speak about each other, it naturally gives an indication of the kind of conflict you would have. But as a young person entering, this person, the older generation, they have experience. There's something you can learn from someone. They understand the organizational culture. They have institutional memory of what happened and why it happened. So even if you enter and you think that things are happening or things are done in a way that you wouldn't perhaps do it in that way because you have new information, still take the time to respect the people that are there and learn from them, and you could become better as a professional. So I would say network within your organization and learn from those who already understand it, because in every organization, there's internal politics and a network that you need to be familiar with. That will help you now to move up in the organization if you understand it well enough. So, I mean, that would be my three things to a young person entering into the workspace, and always ensure that you continue learning and become a subject matter expert in whatever chosen field that you have selected. It doesn't matter what it is. Even if it's journalism, for example, like what you all may do, just be the best. Just master your craft, whatever that craft is. Be a master of it. So that makes you valuable to an organization as well.
And in terms of, all right, you've chosen the space, you mentioned doing research on the type of business that you're entering, trying to find out more about their work environment and so on. How do you get that information to make those decisions? Because that kind of information is kind of difficult to get. You know, it's almost like you'll be doing private eye work. What kind of resource is there so that a young person can research that?
So everybody's on their phone from the get-go. Young people spend a lot of time on their mobile devices, on social media sites, and being entertained. But it's also a powerful tool if you want to find out things. So a company's website tells you a lot about the organization. Companies publish their annual financials. They publish their strategic plan. You get a sense of who the leadership of the organization, who comprise the leadership. From the board to the CEO to the managers, these same people have profiles on LinkedIn and all of that. So you could find them. You could see how they post. You could see what staff are saying about this organization by looking at the profiles that exist. You may perhaps know someone who's working there already when you do your research and get a sense from that person in terms of what's happening at the organization. There's also articles in the newspaper. Some companies are very actively reported on in terms of newspapers, and you could get a sense of what's happening there based on what you're seeing in terms of articles. You also have access via the company's registry as well to know in terms of who are the directors, who are involved in this organization. All this information is public information, I'm talking about, and available online as well too. So you have very powerful in your hand. It depends on how you utilize that tool for information. Then there are recruitment agencies. If I'm a young person now, I would submit my application to a recruitment agency. They have a list of corporations that they recruit on behalf of. That agency and the persons employed there could give you a sense of the organization, give you a sense of the compensation. There's a wealth of information available via recruitment agencies if you register with them. They will share that information with you as well too. And you know the matters that are before the industrial court, that's also public information. Judgments is public information. You could tell a lot about that organization by the amount of cases they have before the court and the judgments against them as well. All these things that I am sharing with you right now, it's all in the public domain. It's not private.
Well, that was... There's some points that you brought up there that I did not know, but I'm sure that a lot of young people, those who are technologically savvy, are like, oh, bet, you know, the word that they like to use, the new language. Melissa shaking her head here for me. But also, in terms of getting all of that information, you've decided, okay, this is the organization that I'm going to enter and send my resume to. You've got the interview. What are some of the key things that makes a good interview and key things that you should not do in an interview that may make the person, the interviewee, say, yeah, for both male and female, but for females more than males right now as we're doing interviews, well, International Women's Day. What are some of the good things and bad things you can do in an interview?
Okay, so let's start off with the good, right? Well, the fact that you are invited to be interviewed said us a lot. They looked at your resume, they looked at whatever your application package encompassed, because sometimes, depending on the nature of the role, it's not only a cover letter or a resume, but it might even be a portfolio of your work that you've done before. If you're an architect or a photographer or a communication specialist, they may want to see samples of your speech and all of that, right? So every organization have different ways of assessing persons to enter. But the fact that you've been invited, that's a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
In preparation for the interview now, the do's. I always say to young people, because you may not always have the resources to have a nice wardrobe of suits and, you know, all of that, invest in an interview suit. One suit, because I know you're not employed yet, especially for someone who this is your first job. You're not employed yet. Invest in one suit that you only use for interviews, if that's the case. And make sure, I always recommend trousers, to be honest, because sometimes the choice of skirts, it may be too tight, it may be too short, and you distract the panel by how you dress. And if you're inappropriately dressed, that's all they'll be focused on.
Mm-hmm.
Choice of jewelry. Keep your jewelry simple. We know some people like to wear big, clunky pieces. Leave that for when you're going out socializing. When you're going into an interview, you need to be very much unassuming. You want the panel to focus on your experience and what's coming out of your mouth, mm-hmm. rather than be distracted by a chandelier earring or a million and one rings on your finger, or by even long, colorful nails, fingernail polish and all of that, right?
Mm.
So do keep your nails short. Do watch your colors on your nails, watch your choice of jewelry. Do choose an appropriate, conservative suit. And I would always say power colors are black and white. If not, you have grays, you have navies, but not the colorful mixture of colors that's very distracting as well too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Make sure your face could be seen, so it's not covered, you know, how in terms of your choice of hairstyle and all of that, but keep it simple so that they could focus on what you bring to the table. Again, do your research on the company you applied, you sent in the application. I recently interviewed someone and she knew nothing about our organization, and I was flabbergasted by that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you can't enter into an interview and not know. And
where you're going.
And some people actually say, it's my mom who sent in this, so I didn't really get a chance to prepare. People actually say these things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you need to do your research before entering. You may find that by doing your research, you will know who you may even possibly encounter. Because on your website, we'll have the HR manager. Some companies publish your photos of your leadership team and all of that. So you enter into a space, you sit, and then you make sure that you answer the questions that is asked of you. Keep it brief and to the point, right? But also you answer in such a way that it could lead to leading questions as well too, from the panel as well, so that the panel demonstrate that they are interested in what you have to say. So don't say yes, no. You know, you may ask,
You can elaborate the answer.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Correct. So do you believe you have good communication skills? Yes. And that's it. No, that is not the response.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the years, I have been writing a lot of letters. You're going to an explanation, not a yes and no and all of that, so that they'll be interested in what you have to say and engaged. Keep the conversation engaging, because it isn't, a conversation. So you don't have to be nervous in an interview or going into an interview room, because it's literally a conversation you're having about yourself,
mm-hmm.
right? Who knows you better than you, right? Who knows your experience, your background? And then, of course, when given the opportunity to now ask a question, use that opportunity wisely and don't focus on the compensation. Demonstrate that you want to learn more and you have a genuine interest in your job. So, you know, get a sense of the team, get a sense of whether they have a strategy in place, whether or not, you know, make it more about the job than the compensation, because there will come a time for negotiation. That time will come. What I find with women, however, women undervalue themselves a lot. So when that time for negotiating comes around, you always find that they're unsure. They will say, well, pay me what you want. No, and I'm like, pay you what you want.
Mm-hmm.
I said to a few women, I said, so if I don't want to pay, is that okay? If I want you to come and work for free, will that be okay?
Well, this is the next question I wanted to ask you. How do women handle wage negotiations, especially in a panel discussion where you're seeing very stern-faced gentlemen looking at you? You know, how do you handle that? And what are some of the key questions to ask once you've reached that part of the job interview?
So if you get to the stage where there's a negotiation now, that means definitely there's some level of interest in you.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why I say the research is important to understand what is the industry standard for pay and compensation for the role that you've applied for, and be aware of that. And again, the information is there. Don't think it's not there. It's there. You can even marry or gauge it against what the public service pays, which is public information. So even if you didn't go through an agency, agencies do provide guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to get a sense of what's happening in different sectors between friends and colleagues working in the sector. There's also a gauge in terms of what the public service pays. And you know, that will set a foundation figure, because most private entities pay more than that, most of them. Mm-hmm. So therefore it gives you a base to work with, right? But always have a sense of a figure in mind, what you think at this stage in your life you're worth. But if this is your first employment, therefore you don't have experience, there's nothing to match or gauge yourself against. So therefore you have to be well prepared to accept what the employer is offering, because you need to get that experience. And employers do have a compensation structure. All of them do, whether they choose to say that to you or not, it exists to guide them in terms of how they compensate for each role. So they're very much aware of what that structure is saying when they're chatting with you. And they very well know the parameters by which the level of engagement could occur. But I think most of the time, women undervalue themselves. And a lot of the times too, they wouldn't submit an application for a job unless they believe they tick every single category that the potential employer is asking for. So you want to tick every single box rather than give yourself a shot by sending in the application. So you find often when men enter into a boardroom and there's time for negotiation, they call in big figures, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, sometimes I'm laughing in my head because the woman that I just met with actually more qualified and competent and had a better interview, and she asks for less
money.
And the man who has little to less than her asks in for a lot more. And I smile in my head and I said, this is the difference between men and women. They come in very, very much confident and want to ask for the sun, the moon and the star, and the woman is undervaluing herself by asking for the bare minimum that is required for the job. So it's something that we need to work on, and I think research will help, and we should get in the habit of doing research before we enter into interviews. But not only that, building that confidence and getting mentored by someone could help, because a mentor who is someone often much more experienced than you, have experience working in multiple organizations and different environments, could actually help you prepare for that interview. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm saying, you need to prepare. So even if it means doing a mock interview, which I've helped a number of people. I remember one person who I was coaching for a CEO role, and they asked me to coach them. And I maybe went through everything in terms of strategy, because, you know, it's a CEO role.
Yes.
So it's being able to do strategy, to read financial reports, to lead a team. You know, we went through everything in terms of what would be important for that role. Because I'm in HR, I know what employers are looking for. So therefore, I would be able to say, well, okay, you need to do this, you need to say this. And I mean, she was successful, right? So I'm just saying, you know, sometimes even having a coach or someone to assist you, and I know a lot of people don't have that in their lives, that is just their reality, but their associations, their volunteer organizations, even like HERMAT, for example, where you may perhaps be able to get someone to give you some guidance. And that is the advisory part in terms of the advisory role, in terms of what we will do, help you prepare for the world of work, basically. UWE does a good job for university students as well with their world of work program, mm-hmm. but there are several organizations that run mentorship programs. And I would say to young men and young women in particular, get yourself a mentor, get yourself into a mentorship program, because it also helps you navigate a world that may be unfamiliar territory to you, but someone has already gone through it and they can now share their experiences with you and provide that guidance to you, because you wouldn't have all the answers as a young person, a young woman especially, entering into the workspace. But you see, being able to negotiate, it's a critical skill, and it's not only for compensation matters. Life in itself is a negotiation constantly. You know, negotiating yourself out of a situation, you can absolutely do that. Negotiating yourself into an opportunity, you could also do that. It's a skill. It's a skill that augurs well for you as a professional in any environment, because it helps you to understand people, understand what they want out of this negotiation. Right. And because I'm a practitioner and I've had to do negotiations with the unions and all of that, I can understand it. And it's a skill that served me well and continues to serve me well, because it's really just understanding people and what they want versus what I want and trying to find the middle ground. Yes. Get a win-win situation. That's basically what it is.
And being a strong force in the workplace amongst men to, you know, dealing with women in the workspace, because you briefly spoke about the wage disparities between men and women and how we have to learn the tools to negotiate that. Being a strong force in the workplace seems to work against women sometimes. How do we find the tools, or what tools do we use to make sure that we are a force in the workplace? We're not here to take your job, but, you know, respect is needed. How do we get to that point?
The thing is, every work environment is trickier because every organization have a different culture. Mm-hmm. In some organizations, there are in fact men who are willing to support, willing to encourage and endorse women as leaders and provide that guidance. I've had men as mentors in my life, for example, and they help pave the way for you to progress in an organization. So it always depends on the culture of the organization. Not all men can actually be good allies. Mm-hmm. Depending on your own style of leadership, your own style will, I guess, determine how a man will treat with you or not. Sometimes that's just the reality, right? Mm-hmm. But as a woman now, I think some women, they adopt very patriarchal behaviors and not recognize that their own uniqueness is their strength. Women have God-given gifts. That intuition, that ability to communicate and to address issues head on, versus some men who really don't like to deal with conflict, don't like to deal with difficult conversations, and therefore HR, pass it to HR, let them handle that because they're not comfortable with it, for example. There are skills that we have, and therefore, because of those skills, we should want to keep it, be your unique self, rather than adopt a different style. And that is what causes the challenge. A lot of women in leadership, because they're adopting something that is not natural to them, and it makes what comes across as aggression as opposed to assertive, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Right? So people would use the word aggressive rather than assertive. And an assertive woman, is nothing is wrong with someone who could speak clearly, who have no problems communicating and expressing themselves, who have no problem with dealing with issues and addressing issues in the workplace, because that's a God-given talent that you have. But what happens sometimes, you get caught up with trying to stay in the role, with survival, with sometimes being the only woman as well too, or one in a few, that you forget the duty and the responsibility you have to pay it forward and to pave the way for others. And that's why a lot of women, especially women who are in very senior roles, will always, when they reflect, you would hear them refer to a male that helped them along the way rather than a female.
Strange enough.
And it's because of that, because when we find ourselves in those roles, we tend to adopt a different style to protect the territory rather than paid forward. And it's something we need to work on. So a man will quicker pay it forward for you because the woman is very protective of her space. And I recently said to some young people, you need to have a growth mindset rather than a mindset that tells you that this is for you and you have to protect it, rather than understand that it's enough for all of us. And I could pave the way for someone else and it does not impact me or my position or my... it doesn't. So it's really a mindset thing that we need to work on to become better. And I say we because I'm a female, but it's not my mindset. I help people all the time, strangers and all, reach out to me, oddly enough. I do provide the advice and the guidance because I do believe it's important to have a lot more of us in this space. There's a need for that diversity and proper inclusion. And you get a lot more innovation, creativity coming out of your workspaces when you have proper representation of everyone in that space, including women, right? I know that the focus today is international women, but diversity comes in all forms and fashions. It's not only a gender thing, right? And we want to make sure that for an organization to thrive and succeed in this world, you know, in the most diverse, I mean, I don't think people understand it, you know. This is the most diverse time in world history the world has ever been, you know.
Yeah, to the point, it's a little confusing to navigate at times because besides the fact that you have to make sure that you don't step on anybody's toes because of, let me put it this way, you see the pronoun thing? That's a little confusing for me. So I understand the it's very confusing navigating through it. Just going back to another point that you were talking about, where the interactions between male and females in the workplace and the idea of having a mentor, do you have like any resources or places that we can link into to like a mentorship program, or do you know of any of these kinds of organizations that exist?
So there are multiple organizations that offer mentorship to both men and women. And it could be professional mentorship, so it could be connected to your profession. So if I were to examine HERMAT, for example, the ability to be mentored for those who are pursuing HR as a career exists by tapping into our organization, contacting us. You could be paired with a mentor, but that's more specific to the career of HR, and it's a more professional outlook. But then there are other organizations. There's AFET that has a strong focus on women and a mentorship program as well. So it doesn't matter what profession you're in, but it's a focus on mentoring girls and women in general, and you could get access to that. And plenty NGOs out there, they offer it. Now, even within organizations, it exists. So if I were to use my organization, for example, I serve as a mentor to people within my organization, whether you're a man or a woman, it doesn't matter. And most of the time, companies have official coaching and mentorship program. So I have personally chosen to mentor, but we do have an official coaching program in my organization as well. And several people are benefiting from it. But we in my organization believe in investing in our people because we want our organization to succeed. We want our leaders to be better. We want our leaders to be emotionally intelligent. We want our leaders to become mentors and coach, because as a manager, your job is not only about the functional responsibility that you have, but you have a commitment, or you should have a commitment, to developing the people that are around you. So I say to my team, if you spent all these years with me and you're still the same person in the same position, I have failed as a leader. Yeah. I have failed as a leader because I did not invest my time in developing you. So when I consider and I look at the growth within my team, and I've only been with them, this is the fourth year now, and the people that I have met when I started and the people that exist today are two different sets of people. And I feel proud about that. And that's my hallmark anywhere I'm at. But that's me personally. We need more leaders to adopt that, because a mentor or a coach exists every and any way. Is if someone is willing to serve in that capacity. And as a leader, you should have that commitment to developing your replacement. I tell my team all the time, well, you only have me for a time, because I'm always quite clear when I'm in an organization what I intend to give to that organization, what I intend to achieve, and the time frame, because I am moving on. I have other goals. I have other ambitions.
And then that's part of the process as well, knowing when to leave, when to hand over, and understanding that you may be, as you say, going on to better things and to other things and have other goals to accomplish.
Yeah. And remember, this generation, this new workforce, the Gen Zs, for example, they are not staying with you for 20 years.
They're not. They've learned from us. So they've decided, I'm not going to be all stressed out. I'm going to go to the coffee shop and do my work and, you know, be calm because I've got the Z in me, the Zen.
So at the end of the day, knowing that, so you'd have to be a fool, to be honest, a foolish leader would think you have this person. So know what time you have with this person and how you're best going to maximize that time. What you're going to get from them and what they are going to get from you, because it's a relationship. Your relationship with your employer should be one that is mutually beneficial. He's getting your time, your expertise, your service, your commitment, profits because of my work, whatever it may be, you're getting something from me, but I should get something in return. So whether it's to learn, to develop new skills, opportunities to travel, opportunities to serve on committees, opportunities to even change careers. People have changed careers in the organization at the end because they discover their passion based on the nature of the business of that organization. So at the end of the day, it's a mutually beneficial relationship, and employers should be investing in the development of their people. I have sat with employers, and some of them, and you always know the ones who are very backward in their thinking, right? And some of them saying that they don't train their staff and all of that. And I'm like, but what benefit it is to you to have people who are not learning and growing around you? How is that benefiting you?
I think that would stagnate the growth of the company altogether if we don't find some sort of upgrade. Even if it's not so much skills, because I think in part the improvement in skills comes from the employees' will or wanting to do that. And in terms of the technology and the systems that are implemented by the employer, those things need to upgrade, because that's how modernization goes and the movement with time. And from that, then you update your skills as an employee.
Correct. So therefore, as an employer, seeing in these times, 21st century, in a world where change is happening faster than any other period in history, where technology is moving us into a pace and a space that is unimaginable, you would say that you are not investing in the people around in their growth and development is a very sad state of affairs for you and your organization. And whether or not that person leaves the organization, because I jokingly say slavery was abandoned many years ago, so you can't force anyone to stay with you, right?
Yeah.
They choose to move on, and that is fine. They moved on to another employer that will benefit from all the learning, but you are also hiring someone that you're benefiting from their past experiences all the same. Your new recruit is someone who's coming not only with their credentials, but all the years' experiences that they've earned from another employer, just to be. It's a cycle. So if every employer were to adopt the attitude of investing in their people, the productivity of the country on a whole will improve, because everybody's investing in the human capital development of the nation. When you are hired and you've worked at Freedom for X amount of years and you move on to somewhere else, that new employer is benefiting from all that you have gained over the years. It is not, that you're packing up the last 5 years' experience and you're starting fresh with something else. It doesn't work that way. So to me, it's a backward thinking. And when I hear it, I'm always shocked, and I always have to counter the argument, because the argument makes no sense to me, zero sense to me.
Mrs. Joseph, I think we'll have to close it off here. The conversation is really interesting, and I would love to have you back again so we could talk a little more about the hiring practices, especially since we've got young people who are leaving school and probably listening out. And not only for young people as well. There are many men and women who are, as you say, doing the transitional thing and looking for other opportunities and life goals and may very well need the advice that you're giving. But I appreciate you taking the time out to come and speak with us here on Freedom 106.5 FM. And we'll be in contact soon.
Well, thank you for having me, and I'm always willing to share. I think it only benefits our people, and that's what I am about. I'm really about the development of people that encounter my space, that are around me. I always say there's no benefit to having quote unquote, so it's not that I'm calling people stupid, but quote unquote stupid people around me. Let's all move, let's all progress, let's all develop together. Let's grow together. It could only redound to the benefit of our country in the end. So I do hope for those who are listening, I mean, you continue to invest in yourself because you have a personal commitment to so do. So you can't always wait on an employer, but employers out there just the same should invest in their people. And to the women out there, continue to be trailblazers, continue to know your worth. And if you don't know it yet, I hope you discover it, because we offer something unique to this world. There's a reason why, you know, there's a reason why we're here and why we exist. So tap into it. I hope you discover it. If you haven't yet, know that you're special and that you can make a difference in the lives around you and the people around you. Women carry so much responsibility already as it, when it comes to the domestic responsibilities and the corporate or the world of work responsibilities, you know. So I do hope that the people around you cherish you, and that the employer and your family celebrate you. And if they didn't, celebrate yourself, because there's nothing wrong with that too. You can very much celebrate yourself.
And this is what today is all about. Thank you so much for joining us today.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.